Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. We are here. It's Thursday, August 24th, and we're going to discuss the NFC North. And to do that, I brought along someone who I think has a passing familiarity with the division. It's Robert Mays of The Ringer.
Hey, buddy.
You sound really enthused about this.
Hey, I've watched this division once or twice in the past. I think that of all of them, I probably have the most knowledge of this one. It's probably close, though. But I'd say this one sneaks by at number one.
I was under the impression you were a Jaguars fan after our podcast in years past, so I'm a little confused as to your Bears fandom, from what I understand you're now apparently a fan of.
I saw that you wrote about one Blake Bortles on ESPN.com today. I will most likely look at that just to, I don't know, work up some seething rage about how terribly run that football team is.
Oh, you don't say. You don't say. You know, I thought Jared Odrick was going to fix that football team, but I guess not.
Stop. You can't bring up 3-year-old arguments. This is dead and gone. Come on now. Let's move on.
Weird. Speaking of moving on, let's talk about a team. Let's start with the team that's moving on from a very short Mike Glennon era, the Chicago Bears, who did a lot of things this offseason. And let me just start from your fan perspective. How do you feel about the Bears versus how you felt about them 12 months ago?
It's not that much different. I felt like when I was trying to convince myself, 12 months ago, I thought it was going to be kind of a disaster. And I figured that going in, it ended up being that way. They were better than their record, but not by much.
Sure.
I was excited to a certain degree 6 months ago. I felt like the moves they'd made on defense, they'd have a chance to be pretty solid on that side if they stayed healthy. That's already come into question. You know, Pernell McPhee figured to be a big part of what they did. He's just a knee abnormality in the other knee. He's cursed, and as a result, so am I. I still think that they have the bodies over there to be solid with Fangio.
Sure.
And obviously, everything changed when the Trubisky stuff went down. I mean, I wasn't thrilled with Glennon. I could understand from a management and ownership perspective why you'd have to make a move like that and not just have a stopgap guy. But then using the second overall pick on somebody made me question why you wouldn't just have a stopgap guy. There are a lot of things that just didn't seem to mesh. But right now, I think that if Trubisky ends up becoming a player, I won't care about anything else that they did. If he ends up becoming a really good quarterback, everything else is moot.
Yeah, I mean, sure. But we could have said the same thing about Blake Bortles, where it's, okay, well, they turned down those two first-round picks the Bills were offering for Sammy Watkins, and well, you know, if it works out well, it works out well. No one cares, but it didn't work out well. So we don't know what the chances are of Trubisky turning into a useful professional quarterback are. It's fair to say, you know, not that this matters all that much, but early returns in the preseason are not exactly upsetting. He looks pretty good so far in the preseason.
He looks really good. And to me, obviously it's against who he's playing, whatever. But it's mostly just the way he moves, how comfortable he looks. I think in the preseason, you shouldn't get too excited, but you can get too discouraged. If somebody looks like absolute trash, then you should be worried. I'm tempered my expectations, but I also am not disappointed. And I think that's the most important thing at this point. And in my mind, the reason to keep him on the bench wasn't that you paid Glennon this amount of money. It was if you thought he was going to actively hurt himself by coming into the game, if you thought that his development would be stunted in any way because he wasn't surrounded by enough talent or he didn't fit with the scheme or any of that stuff, then I feel like you just got Glennon out there for this season. But if he's actively better and he's going to get better with the reps and it's not going to hurt him just 100% when he's out there, I think he should be the quarterback. And that's how I feel about it right now.
Have you ever, placed a bid on the eBay auction where you were like, you placed a really high bid super early in the auction expecting people to top it and then no one ever topped it? That kind of feels like
the Bears, Mike Glennon.
Yeah,
kind
of feels like the deal.
I was talking to Matt Hasselbeck about this a couple days ago, actually, for a different story that I was working on. And he brought up an interesting point, and he kind of compared it to what happened with the Seahawks and Russell Wilson and Matt Flynn a couple years ago.
Sure.
And obviously, Trubisky's a second overall pick. He's not a third rounder, so it's easier to put him in there if he's the better guy. But the Seahawks, I feel like, considered their quarterback position that year as one collective investment. How much are you spending on quarterbacks as a whole? And at this point, if the Bears are spending, I don't know what Trubisky makes as a second overall pick, it's only a few million.
Yeah.
A collective 18 or 20 million this season on quarterback, then it starts to make a little bit more sense, right? You just throw everything you can at that position to see if you can get somebody. Mm-hmm. And if they do, then the opportunity cost isn't that terrible to me. I feel like it's something you could live with.
Sure. I mean, they could have saved $15 million, used that on Alshon Jeffery, and then maybe not gone for the poo-poo platter of receivers that ended up with them signing Victor Cruz, Marcus Wheaton, and Kendall Wright, and Deion Sims. Don't make me forget Deion Sims. But, yeah, there is some truth to that. And at this point, it's a sunk cost, right? Like, it's not as if they can go back and change it. They can't go back and do anything about it. If anything, and I'll ask you about this, they might be able to get something back on Glennon if they consider trading him at this point. I don't know if that's necessarily the best move. They do have Mark Sanchez who could, you know, fill in as a short-term backup before Trubisky. But I wonder if, you know, if they're willing necessarily to go to the Jags and offer to pay a good chunk of Glennon's money and offer Glennon to the Jags for, you know, for a sixth-round pick and maybe taking $4 or $5 million of the, of Glennon's salary off of their hands.
So I feel like there can be competing motivations with that, right? So on the management side, I think you don't care about that at all. You do that in a heartbeat because you recoup something for Glennon, and then it doesn't. If Trubisky gets hurt, the season is lost on the management side anyway. So who cares who the backup quarterback is? If it's Sanchez and they win four games, you get a top five pick and you try to reload again next year. Mm-hmm. But on the coaching side, I think there's going to be some hesitation to that, right? Because they wouldn't want to bottom out if Trubisky gets hurt. You know, Fox is in large part coaching for his job this year. Mm-hmm. But if Pace believes that he has the patience from ownership, and if Trubisky went down, they lost four games, and he can point and say, well, my guy got hurt, it's not my fault, then I think you try to do that every single time. You know, it's not the exact one-for-one comparison mm-hmm. to what happened in Philadelphia last year, but you're trying to follow that model to some degree.
Let me ask you, I mean, in terms of John Fox's future, what's the minimum level of success, whether it's development patterns, whether it's win-loss record, what's the point he has to get to where we'll say, okay, he deserves another year or an extension or another couple of years, and we're going to stick with the Ryan Pace, John Fox regime?
I think you have to go at least 500 this year.
Really? You have to go from, they were 3-13 last year, no?
Yeah, well, they were better than 3-13. I think we know that. They were a better football team than 3-13 showed.
Yeah,
so
but they were...
you need improvement both in the record and what's happening on the field. I think that you need a defense that's at least above average. Things like that. You need to see market improvement plus some results. I feel like it's going to be really hard for them to make an argument that he deserves to stay with the most important thing being developing this young quarterback. I mean, do we have any reason to think John Fox is the person that should be in charge for that to happen?
I don't know. I mean, no, that's not true at all.
Yeah. That's why I was kind of upset about this whole thing when they kept him this year. I mean, I understand that, like, I guess I don't understand it. What's the point of bringing Dowell Loggett? He was talking about it yesterday. He's like, yeah, you know, we have three new quarterbacks learning the system. It's like, why was the system the important thing to keep here? I don't understand this line of thinking.
Yeah, and I mean, you would hope that there would have been more development from the defense than there has been over John Fox and Vic Fangio's years in Chicago. They were better last year. They jumped from 31st to 23rd in DVOA, but... And there's certainly talent here. I mean, I think maybe
they were so hurt last year.
That's the thing maybe you could say.
They were so hurt last year. They were the hurt or suspended. You know, Freeman was out. Trevathan was out. You have McPhee missing a huge chunk of the season. Eddie Goldman didn't play that much. The back end was a disaster.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this a lot, right? That sometimes
we talked about literally everything a lot, Mace. There's nothing we haven't talked about a lot in our lives.
This is something we've kind of hit on a lot, though, is that sometimes it's best to go from bargain basement to NFL player at certain positions. And nobody's excited about Marcus Cooper, but Marcus Cooper has played cornerback in the NFL before. And I think that at this point, that's all you needed from those defensive backs in Chicago. With the talent they have in the front seven, you just need guys who can get in people's ways on the back end. And I think that's a huge jump. And that's what they did. You know, they didn't spend a ton of money, but they went out and got guys that are maybe a tiny bit below average NFL cornerbacks with Amukamara and Cooper. And I think it's sometimes those are the biggest improvements you can make, especially at top-end positions, tackle, quarterback, corner. So I think that it's reasonable to assume that if they stay a little bit healthier in the front seven, that as a whole, that unit can be a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, there is depth there in the front seven for sure. Eddie Goldman, someone who looked pretty good as a rookie, had really a lost year with injuries last year, but could be a you know, really impactful player on the interior there. Akeem Hicks had a very good season last year. He's probably not going to have, what, the 10 sacks last year? He's probably not going to have
that. Yeah, he won't be that productive, but I think he can be as impactful as a player. The counting stats may not be there, but I think Akeem Hicks is good.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we saw a little bit out of Leonard Floyd last year, and they do have a pretty deep, you know, group of edge rushers. So you would hope that you can get a pass rush, you can have a decent run defense, and then if the secondary is a little better, maybe they're a league average defense, maybe they're even a little better than a league average defense. I mean, you would think that it's more likely the development is going to, and the improvement is going to come from the defensive side of the ball than from the offensive side of the ball, regardless of who's playing quarterback this year.
I agree with that, but I also think the offense might not be terrible. If Trubisky's reasonable, the interior of the offensive line is good.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just a really solid group, and I think you saw that in the run game last year. That foundation is something that I like, especially considering Trubisky's skill set. They're going to use him in play action a lot. That's going to be what they try to do, is use the running game to offset the passing game. And I don't know. I was watching Kevin White yesterday. The guy can move, and he can play. It's just a matter of staying on the field. You know, so I think that him and Cam Meredith, it's not the Jets. You know, we're not excited about those two, but it's not as if there's absolutely no hope for them to have playmakers. I think the ceiling is low, but I think that if White stays healthy, they also have a chance to be better than people think.
They're not the Jets is clearing the lowest possible bar, maybe in NFL history.
That, but I assume that people would make that comparison. They would look at this team and say, well, who from this group do you want on your fantasy team? I think the answer is a couple guys. I mean, the Jets is absolutely nobody.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fair. Are you happy about the Charles Leno re-signing that happened yesterday?
It's kind of the same thing we're talking about with the corners, right? When you can get a guy who is competent to a certain degree at that position, it's okay. I don't love him. He's not one of the best 10 left tackles in the league, but he might be in the top half. I mean, I think that's what he got paid. You know, the 16th among tackles in terms of average salary. And guaranteed money is, what, $20 million? So, you know, that's a 2-year contract for a guy that hasn't been bad. I don't mind it. I think that that's the contract you hand out, especially with the captain you've got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know that I'd say he's the 16th best left tackle in football. I think I could probably, if we went through team by team, we'd come up with 16 better left tackles.
That's probably fair. I mean, he's probably a little bit lower than that. But again, he's a guy that doesn't preclude you from doing what you want on offense. And I think that's important to find at those spots.
Yeah, and I think the interior of this offensive line is good enough that, you know, you can maybe give him a little more help than you would otherwise. And you can, you know, you have Deion Sims who, for whatever they're paying him, which is absurd, he has a pretty good blocking tight end. So you can give you can help to your tackles and pass protection. And that will help a little bit, hopefully. But again, this is going to be a team where if they're going to be effective, they're going to be running the ball and they're going to be, you know, building everything off of that. So there's an offensive philosophy, at least here. I don't know if it's going to work, but you could plausibly at least see it coming together. Is there a breakout player from this team for you in 2017?
I mean, I think that when we talk about Kevin White, he could be. If he stays in the field and he ends up becoming the player that even close to what they thought he could be. A couple of the other guys, the two of the rookies that have impressed people and that I think could be reasonably big parts of the game plan in certain situations, people love Tariq Cohen, the fourth-round pick, a little running back. I think he can just play. You know, some guys are small, but they just have a feel for everything. And that's everything you've heard about him. That's the case. And then I think I would like to see Adam Shaheen be a part of the game plan as well. Just a guy they drafted in the second round, a big, big tight end. I think we're going to see a lot of 2 and 3 tight end sets from them, a lot of motion out of those. You know, similar to some of the stuff we saw in Tennessee last year, just a way to bolster a young quarterback and really help create some complexity to your offense in a way that's not that hard for guys to grasp. So if they do that and he's on the field a lot, I think he'll make some plays.
Yeah, it's not great. I know this isn't fair necessarily, but it's not great to read the RLADS scouting report on Adam Shaheen, and it ends with 4th, 5th round, and then you think the Bears took him in the middle of the second round.
It's so tough, though, because when you're watching that guy, he absolutely dominates the guys he's playing against on film. But he should. You know, when you're playing at that small of a school, that's the bar you have to clear. But he does to a certain degree, and he just is a natural catcher. And that's what I like. He's not just a big guy. I think he's got soft hands. It just, I get why you'd go up and get him. I know it was kind of silly when they did it, but it's not a shock to me. I didn't hate that pick.
We'll see in a couple of years. We'll see how it goes.
I mean, it'd
be hard to rule him out now, but.
Listen, man, the Bears' second round pick history is a dark, dark place. I lived through the Dan Bazine era.
That was I don't know if Dan Bazine lived through the Dan Bazine era. So
no, none of us. Few of us did.
All right. I'm going to say Eddie Goldman, which might be a little unfair. He may have broken out already, but I think sort of breaking out onto the national consciousness as a meaningful interior player, just given the injuries last year, I think it wasn't necessarily his season, but someone who has a lot of promise and someone who I think can be a difference maker on the interior for sure.
What do you think they finish with? This is something I've thought about a lot, and I never end up landing on a good answer.
I just picture you just laying in bed, unable to sleep, just staring at the ceiling, doing wind projections, saying, oh, it doesn't feel right. Oh, it doesn't feel right either, but I don't know. The numbers say they are going to improve. They were 3-13 team with a 4.8 win Pythagorean expectation. They were 1-6 in one score games last year. They recovered the fifth fewest rate of fumbles in all of football. Oh, everything basically says this team is going to be better next year. How much better, I think, is a serious question. I'm going to say they get to 6-10. And that's, to me, they're doubling their win record. I don't think that's a necessarily negative season, but it might not be enough to save John Fox's job.
I think 6-10 makes sense. That's what I would land on through all of the iterations that could exist. But I do think there's a chance they go 7-9 or 8-8. I think they can be that sort of, like, in the mix, annoying, you know, a team that is just hard out every single week. I feel like they could be that kind of group, especially if Trubisky can play.
I would say
6-10, but better than that, I wouldn't surprise me.
If Trubisky's good, they could be a 10-win team. I mean, it's not out of the question that they could be good. That's, you know, stranger things have happened.
Yeah. I think the ceiling on the defense is lower than I thought it was going to be. I mean, maybe I'm just overrating how good McPhee is, but I thought he was going to be a huge part of what they did. And I just think that they have depth on the edge, but it's not guys you're super excited about. Like, Willie Young is fine. Like, Lamar Houston, we've seen forever. There's not a lot of just dynamic talent over there.
Leonard Floyd?
I think losing well, except for Floyd. I mean opposite Floyd.
That's a dude.
Of course. Yes, he's very good. But opposite him, I think that if they lose McPhee, the pass rush just becomes more of a question than it was with him.
Sure. It's not out of the question, but if Floyd takes a big leap forward, if he's a 13-sack guy, we're talking about a best-case scenario here, then suddenly...
Listen, man, I'm cool with that. Yeah. That works for me.
Yeah, you don't need to have a superstar across the room. You can have Willie Young and Lamar Houston and have those guys be viable second options. Have Akeem Hicks being, you know, an interior pressure option and have that be, you know, the second tier of a useful pass rush. So, I mean, that's not...
Just move on, because you're getting me too... I'm too happy right now. I'm just going to be disappointed.
Well, nothing makes anyone happier than talking about the Detroit Lions, a team that was... They're almost... This is going to sound mean. I don't mean it in a mean way, but they're really unwatchable year after year, where it's like their season comes down to what they do in the fourth quarter of 10 or 12 games over the course of a season. That determines whether they're a good team or a bad team. And this year... last year was no exception. They were 8-5 in one-score games. Matthew Stafford set the NFL record for most fourth-quarter comebacks in one season with 8. What a strange team. I don't really know what to make of them on a year-to-year basis.
It's a bizarre team. And when I looked at it on paper when they were coming into the year, the moves they made, I really liked them. You know me. A team that spends a lot on the offensive line and really throws resources there, I tend to like those plans. And that's what we've seen from Detroit over the last 2 years, right? They go get Taylor Decker in the first round, and then this year they sign both T.J. Lang and Rick Wagner. And even if you think they had to pay a premium for both of those guys, which they probably did, I still thought that that could go from a weakness to a strength in a single season.
But here's the
and
thing,
when you
though.
Can sit,
it's not like they're replacing two replacement level talents at those positions. They're replacing Riley Reiff and they're replacing Larry Warford, who, say what you want about those guys, they were at least NFL starters. It's not like they were...
That's true.
You know, they weren't replacing Chop Liver.
No, they weren't, but it's an upgrade in both spots.
I think it's an upgrade in both spots.
I like Decker. And then I just think that if you add that, even if it's a little bit better, if the running game can improve a tiny bit with those two guys, I like... And Amir Abdullah stays healthy, you know, again. We have no reason to think that's going to happen. But it's... Him, Theo Riddick, the receivers that they have, I just, there's enough offensive talent to get me excited about this team. Mm-hmm. And then I move to the other side of the ball and I'm just like, wait a second, what? what's happening here?
Yeah.
Weren't they the worst defense in the league last year?
They were. It turns out they were the 32nd
worst defense. What's happening here?
Yeah.
Nothing's happened. I mean, they've done nothing marked. They drafted Jared Davis in the first round, which... as much as you can love a move linebacker, you know, how excited can you be for that being the transformational element for a defense?
Yeah.
And then Tease Tabor is like a corner that no one likes and that they drafted in the second round. So I don't know. It's the fact that DJ Hayden is going to play a really big role on this team. That doesn't excite me. It just doesn't feel like there's a reason to think the defense is going to be that much better. And it just seems like we're going for this 37-34 shootouts that go down to the last minute every game. They either just miss the playoffs or just sneak in and get crushed in the first round. I don't know. How much hope can you possibly have if you're a Lions fan for this year to be better than last year?
I don't know. I mean, the Raiders broke out last year with DJ Hayden on the roster, so I wouldn't count out the Lions doing the same thing.
He was the most important player. DJ Hayden, Defensive Player of the Year. Quarterback actually gave him the trophy. It's sitting on DJ Hayden's mantle.
He's got the truck. I agree with you. And this was a defense that they might be worse talent-wise up and down than they were a year ago starting the season. And you say, okay, well, maybe they're going to get – not maybe. They're definitely going to get more out of Ziggy Ansah, who – had a high ankle sprain, missed a chunk of last year, wasn't his usual self. I think had 2 sacks by the end of the season.
He's still not playing, though. I mean, I understand that they're trying to take it easy because they don't want a repeat of that, but it's August 23rd. You have to start getting worried at some point.
Sure, I am. I still think he's going to be more productive than he was a year ago. Even if he plays 12 games, he's going to get more sacks than he had a year ago. But
the best player on that defense last year was Kerry Hyder, and he's out for the year.
Who tore his Achilles?
Yes, which sucks. I mean, he was one of the guys last year. You know, they're those guys that just you haven't seen ever before. Yeah. And when you were number 66 as a defensive end, you know you weren't supposed to make the team. So when he kept popping up, I was like, who is this dude? And he was excellent last season. I mean, Darius Slay is a better player than him. I'm exaggerating. But he was a really productive player for them in the front seven. And it's not as if this team has the depth to lose guys like that.
No, I mean, they're starting Cornelius Washington at defensive end.
And I've lived that Cornelius Washington life. Yeah. I have seen him like 4 snaps a game for years.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be enthused about that necessarily. Armonte Bryant is suspended for 4 games. This is a team that it's hard to look at this lineup and say, okay, well, this is going to be the strength of this team. This is the thing where even with the Bears, it's like, okay, well, maybe the secondary is bad, but that front seven, at least you can hopefully rely on. There's nothing you can really rely on with this team. You have Darius Slay, who's very good, but the opposite cornerback slot is a mess. Glover Quinn has been good at points in his career. Maybe think he's getting a little up there, but safety's not necessarily a solution. Tavon Wilson was not a great safety for the Patriots year after year. He was a villain.
Like Glover Quinn, though. He's always been one of my favorite players. I just think that guy knows what to do. And he knows where to be. He makes plays. He's a guy that I think that for a defense that's bad, this may be a strange way to think about it, for a defense that doesn't have a lot of talent, I think he's a very useful player just because he's around the ball. He makes plays. You need to be high variance when you're not as good as other people, and I think that's the type of guy he is.
This is talking yourself into the Lions.
I'm just trying to be excited about stuff. It's August. There's no reason not to be.
The thing I would say is, like, and this is mean to say, but I have to say, like, they're not depending on DeAndre Levy this year, which he's gone and he was a great player, but for the past 2 years, they've pretty much been hoping he was going to come back, and he's not on the roster anymore, so he's not coming back. So at least you have that thing where you're planning on starting your season without him as opposed to sort of just hoping and waiting for him to come back. There's nothing to get enthused about on this team. It's hard to imagine what would make them much better. Even if they have that dead cat bounce and they jump from 32nd to 29th in defensive DVOA, the ceiling for this defense is so low, and the floor seems really low. It seems enormously low. So I'm just very concerned about their ability to, you know, counteract any regression from the offense. And it's entirely possible the offense isn't as effective as it was a year ago, especially in the fourth quarter of games.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I get excited about the offense when I think about the best case scenario.
Sure.
But I just think that they could be a really fun team that doesn't win a lot. I mean, that's just what I see from this team. I think the offense has a ceiling that could make them one of the better offenses in the league, you know, in the top 10.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
How?
I think that I just do. I think that if their running game gets better, if the additions they've made on the offensive line help the running game get better, if they stay healthy in the backfield the entire season, if Abdullah eventually gets enough carries, that if their running game is middle of the road, I think the passing game can be good enough to make them a scary offense. But even if that's true, and again, that's the best case scenario, I don't think the defense is going to be good enough to make up for it. They're an average team to me, no matter what happens on the offense.
Okay, let me give you a couple reasons why the offense might not do what you're saying it's going to do. Number one, you're talking about Amir Abdullah being healthy when he hasn't been healthy at any point during his professional career. That's a bad start to your argument. Second bad part to your argument is that Taylor Decker is out for half the season at left tackle, and their current starting left tackle is Greg Robinson.
Yeah, I know.
And you know what? He's looked better in the preseason. I'm going to have to see it in the regular season with my own eyes. I've been fooled by Greg Robinson before. I'm not letting that happen again. I've learned my lesson. So I'm a little
concerned. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I don't want you to be right.
That's been the constant line running through our entire friendship. So I'm not surprised by that in the slightest. I mean, could you imagine a world where Eric Ebron breaks out into a superstar and
no.
they have
Vernon? No, I'm not playing that game. The Eric Ebron breakout season is not something I'm willing to get into. Not again.
What if he does, though? What if he does?
Then I'll be wrong. I will be the person who didn't call it then. That's totally fine with me. I'm much more excited about calling the Kenny Galladay breakout season than the Eric Ebron breakout season.
That's fair. I'm excited about Kenny Galladay. I think he could be an interesting third wideout for them, replacing Anquan Boldin. And I love the Jim Bob Cooter offense. It's weird. I wrote about Matthew Stafford this week, and I compared it to, like, having a Ferrari that you take out to the grocery store every day, a half mile away. Like, you have this incredible arm and don't use it, but it works. Like, it's a functional offense, and I wonder if it will change if the offensive line is as effective as maybe we're hoping it'll be.
I like the offense. I think that you're right. They don't chuck it downfield a ton, so you're not using the arm. But my favorite thing about Stafford is the arm angle changes. It's him being able to get off passes in weird spots. Mm-hmm. And in this offense, that actually works because he has to really navigate the front seven because of where he's throwing the ball. So being able to kind of fit balls into those windows, he's really good at that. So I agree that, you know, they're not letting him push it. And when you have that cannon, that's kind of sad. But I do think his kind of unique, fun-to-watch skill set does lend to this offense in some way.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who, you know, early in his career suffered a ton of injuries, a guy who would go sidearm, and it was kind of terrifying, but he seems to have worked those things out. He hasn't got hurt, really. He got that Vikings game where he was, like, coughing up blood afterwards, but it's mostly been... And the finger
lashes. That was 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, that was 2 years ago. That was, like, when the Vikings...
Yeah, God, that game was brutal.
Yeah. Let's hope that doesn't happen
again. It was
again.
Fun to watch as someone who really likes the Vikings defense, but I felt bad for Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, I felt bad too. And I mean, like, the finger hurt him at the end of last season, kind of hurt his numbers a bit, but overall he hasn't been missing time, which was the case earlier in his career, and he's gotten better at getting those passes out. He's more selective about when he uses those sidearm passes, and they tend to be more effective. For me, I think just... Oh, actually, no, let's do a breakout player first before we get to our thoughts about the 2017 season.
I mean, Kenny Galladay is the easy one, right? If he can make a ton of big plays, he'll be exciting. No one else on the offense would really apply. Mm. I think on the defense, the guy... Who would you say?
What if Greg Robinson breaks out?
Oh, man. You're going to do that, huh?
I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I think that he's a plausible case.
All right. Just as a narrative overall for the 2017 NFL season, how bad are we treating the 2016 Rams coaching staff? Because everything I've read, everything I've seen, I think Lewis Riddick tweeted about it last night, just how ridiculous it is, the difference between the scheme from this year and the scheme from last year. Like, did they just not have NFL coaches? Or is that just what we're willing to say at this point?
What basis is there for saying that they were really good at their job and that they did do a good job with developing the people they have?
There is none. I mean, there is no basis on saying that, but Greg Robinson couldn't play like four positions and suddenly we think he's going to be a breakout left tackle. I'm not taking it off the table. I'm just saying the odds of it to me are pretty low.
I think it's totally reasonable. Do you remember who the Rams offensive coordinator was last year, by the way? Can you name him?
Rob Boris. Yeah. I don't know why I know that.
I'm a little concerned that you do. Is he in? He's the Bills tight end coach right now. I mean, there's...
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's like, okay. I mean, there's not... Nobody was saying, oh, Rob Boris needs to get this offensive coordinator gig. We got to hold on to Rob Boris. We're going to lose him to another team. Like, that's... It's a sign of where they were. Greg Williams has a better pedigree, but his defenses in years past have not exactly been very effective. You get the idea, though. I mean, it was a problem last year. And it's a little too early to give up on Greg Robinson. I don't think it's going to work out. I don't think he's going to succeed, but there is at least, you know, the athleticism is still there. It's not like he's Jake Long in terms of having had a ton of injuries.
No, you're right. And I, trust me, I loved watching Greg Robinson in college. I understand why they drafted him there. I think that people convinced themselves of the narrative in the conversation was that, oh, he ran this 40 and dot, dot, dot. Mm-hmm. I watched Greg Robinson destroy my football team in the SEC championship game. I mean, it was absurd. So I think that he does have a ton of talent. If they can get the most out of him, that's fun to me. The guy I'm going to say also went to college in Alabama, A'shaun Robinson just is a monster of a man. Mm-hmm. And he looks good. He came on pretty strong in the second half of the season. I think that he'd be a fun guy to watch in year two. Of everybody in the defense, he's the one I think has a chance to take the biggest step.
Yeah, totally plausible. I will say I don't think they can pull off the winning an NFL record amount of close games again this year. I'm a little skeptical that the defense will be any good relative to where it was a couple of years ago. I have them at 7-9, so a little better than they were, or than maybe I would have expected heading into the season. I thought they were really going to be bad. I think they're going to be okay, but I just think a step backwards after a surprisingly promising 2016.
I'm going to say 8-8 just because I feel like the offense is going to be better than you think. I think they do have a chance to be exciting on that side of the ball. It's kind of like the Saints, right? I mean, I don't think they're going to be as good on offense as the Saints. Just they could be, but the Saints are just this drum that beats over and over. But at a certain point, it doesn't matter how good the offense is if the defense is just a sieve the entire season.
Okay, so the Lions were 15th in DVOA last year. They were negative 0.6% DVOA. The Saints were 6th with a 15.4% DVOA.
Well, I understand that. I'm just saying, they're not the Saints, but if their offense does, if the best-case scenario does happen, if they do end up being a top 9 offense, then I think that's even their ceiling is 8-8 just because of what the defense is going to be. I understand they're not the Saints, Barwell. I'm making a comparison for good offenses and bad defenses.
Love to be berated on my own podcast. That stuff may have flown in years past.
You asked me to come.
I asked you to come. That's right. We're going to take a break and have a chat about how to treat people on their podcast. We'll be back with more Bill Barnwell Show here in a second. But first, I don't know if you've heard, guys, but the Jacksonville Jaguars are in need of a starting quarterback. It's gone pretty poorly. Blake Bortles was signed and it has not gone super well. I have good news. I know how to fix this. I'm not an expert. I'm not a guru. I'm not a coach. I'm not a GM. What I am is a man who has heard about ZipRecruiter. Because if you have a job that's open, like the Jaguars starting quarterback job, you can post that job on 100 plus job sites with one single click. ZipRecruiter does that for you. Out of the kindness of their heart, I think. They're really nice. And they do such an incredible job. They take your job, put it on all these sites, and they do it incredibly quickly, incredibly reliably, and you get the best qualified candidates incredibly quickly. Over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Kyle Orton is just searching around on ZipRecruiter looking for a job, and he's going to contact the Jags. That's hardly out of the question, given how successful other jobs in other industries have done on ZipRecruiter in years past. So you can find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And even better, the Jags can probably afford it. But if your business can't afford it, if you want to save some money, you can post your jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell, which is my last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. Again, ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell, and you can post your job on ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. Welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. I am joined here by Robert Mays of The Ringer to talk about the NFC North and talk about a team that is near and dear to Robert Mays' heart, the Green Bay Packers, who...
How dare you?
How dare...
We had a conversation about being nicer, and then you're going to come out and do this right away.
Real fans know who Robert Mays actually roots for. And
the meanest thing you've ever done to me.
Aaron Rodgers has done meaner things to you than what I just did to you, Mays.
It's so true.
And he did mean things last year in the second half after he looked mediocre in some ways for the first half of the season, after he was struggling mightily, the offense looked out of sorts. Weird. Suddenly Aaron Rodgers figured things out, and then for the second half he was terrifying, and the Packers were a downright incredible offense at stretches, finished fourth in DVOA. And to me, I think that there are concerns, but I think that the offense that we saw over the second half of 2016 is more likely to be the offense we see here in 2017.
You do think it's going to be that, or you don't?
I do.
More like. I'm sorry. I didn't catch what you said. Yes, I agree. And I think the only concern, right, is the changes along the offensive line.
Yep.
I mean, for the most part, everything else is back. So the fact that you're switching out TJ Lang for Jarry Evans, you're switching out JC, well, Lindsey and Shredder played last year. Lane Taylor played a decent amount. It's really just Evans for Lang for the most part. Yeah. Lang was also banged up last year. I think that, you know, I love continuity on the offensive line. I value it as much as anybody does. Mm-hmm. But I feel like this is something they can easily overcome. You know, Evans is a significantly worse player than Lang. But with everything else they have, with Rodgers, adding Martellus Bennett, I think the offense is just going to keep on rolling.
I don't disagree with you, but it does feel a little disrespectful to Jarry Evans. Man was a star at one point in his career. He was good.
I understand that. A lot of people have been good at certain points. I was probably good at something at one point in my life. I'm not anymore. People get worse at things.
That's true. Once an excellent oral historian, and now...
That's right. No longer... Jarry Evans was great. I mean, he was a staple of those Saints teams, but sure. TJ Lang is one of the better guards in the league still when healthy. Mm. And Jarry Evans is not that. I mean, it's a downgrade. But yeah. We've seen that Rodgers is able to succeed as they cycle in and out of guys. A couple of years ago when they were really dominating in his MVP season, I felt like them staying healthy up front was a big part of why they just turned into this machine. Mm-hmm. But last year we saw that they can become that even when that isn't the case.
Yeah.
And it's a testament just to how good he is.
And I mean, the happy thing here is that you still have your tackle set with David Bakhtiari and Brian Bulaga, who are maybe one of the best tackle combinations in all of football. And then on top of that, I would say you've upgraded by replacing Jared Cook with Martellus Bennett.
You think?
I mean, there are people out there who think Jared Cook is great at this point of his career, and he's not.
Oh, like, that's insane. Martellus Bennett is like 190% better than Jared Cook. Wow. I am so excited to watch Martellus Bennett in that offense. I feel like he was kind of miscast last year. You know, he didn't get to play the role in New England they thought he was going to after Rob Gronkowski got hurt. So, and Mark Bennett was dinged up too.
He had a horrible ankle injury.
I think he has a chance to be excellent in this offense. And also, the thing people never talk about with Martellus Bennett, he's a really good run blocker.
He's great.
I mean, he has a chance to come in and affect this offense in that way as well. So you bring him in as an added receiving threat, mm-hmm. help on the offensive line when that group may not be as good as it has been in years past. I just think that everything points to them being one of the best two or three offenses in the league again. And, yeah, I think he has a chance to be the best middle-of-the-field receiving threat that they've had since JerMichael Finley left. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he had an 800-yard season.
Sure. Hardly out of the question. Should be a threat in the red zone as well. And, you know, the receivers are back. I believe in Devontae Adams, but maybe not as much as I believed in Devontae Adams last year and after what happened over the previous two seasons. I mean, I think I want to see him do it again before I believe that he's going to be the guy he was in 2016.
But, yeah, I don't think those numbers are coming again. Yeah. As much as you could like Devontae Adams, it doesn't seem like that's going to happen.
How do you think the running game shakes out?
I think that Montgomery is just a reasonable running back. I think that he's going to be able to shoulder the load and be effective the same way he was last year. And they're going to give Jamal Williams some of that work. But I do think that the running game can be fine. There's no reason for me to believe it shouldn't be.
If Devontae Mays breaks out into a superstar and I buy you a Packers Mays jersey, will you wear it?
No. I'll have to choose whether or not to burn it. The only reason I wouldn't do that is out of respect to Devontae Mays.
I will find it hard not to, I have to admit. If they do that. Now, also the big concern about the Packers last year on defense was the secondary, especially cornerback, where they had injuries. Sam Shields went out for the year in week one. You know, their younger guys maybe weren't healthy altogether, and then they spent a lot of time with Ladarius Gunter almost as their top cornerback. That was a problem. You would think they have addressed that this offseason, where they drafted Kevin King, they drafted Josh Jones to help out at safety, which may help them move Morgan Burnett down to linebacker almost and have him play as a D'Ambi Cannon-esque sort of safety hybrid linebacker. They re-signed Devon House, who was struggling in Jacksonville and got benched. And let's say he's going to be a superstar, but he was at least a functional cornerback for them a couple years ago. got rid of Shields, but now you have Quinton Rollins, Demaryius Randle, Kevin King, Ladarius Gunter, Devon House. You're less likely to be rolling out replacement level talent at cornerback. And you have a depth there that maybe wasn't quite there this time last year.
Depth is important, like we saw last year, but also flexibility. And mm-hmm. I think that what you saw them do with Micah Hyde last year, just using him as a hybrid safety corner and just blitzing from the slot a lot, using him in a lot of different ways. I feel like we're seeing more and more teams do that, right? Where they're putting three safeties on the field. They're putting people in different spots on defense. It's one, to be unpredictable, but two, just to get your best players out there.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they've tried to do, is let's get as many bodies as we can, and then we'll figure out how it eventually shakes out. Who's going to play where? How many people get this amount of reps? So I think they've given themselves options. Mm-hmm. And on the back end right now, I think that's the most important thing you can do.
Yeah, I mean, they have one superstar back there in HaHa Clinton-Dix, and everyone else is kind of a guy you have to spot, a guy who's not going to be a every down, shut down player at his position. So, if you don't have those stars, the depth is the next best way to go about it. Having guys who are going to stay fresh, guys who are going to, you know, be able to rotate in and out, guys you can use in different roles, I think is what you're going to have to pull off. Are you as skeptical of Nick Perry as I am?
Yeah, I think you have to be in a certain way. I actually wrote about Nick Perry last year. He and I had a pretty lengthy conversation in the middle of the season just about his approach and everything else. I think Nick Perry is a good player.
Sure.
I don't know if he's going to be a double-digit sack guy again. I think that the contract they gave him makes sense to me. Because with me and pass rushers, it's that we don't see like the hidden value with some of these guys. Nick Perry is an excellent run defender.
Sure.
So it's not just whatever the pass rush numbers are. So I think that you're paying him for two different things. And when you consider that, I think the contract makes sense.
But how much do run-stopping outside linebackers go for in free agency, Miz?
Well, you can't just be a run-stopping outside linebacker. He's also a reasonable pass rusher. He was very good in that respect last year.
He was very good in that fact last year. But this is a guy who the Packers did not tender a fifth-year option to, if I'm not mistaken.
Because he couldn't stay healthy. I mean, it wasn't a matter of talent. It was a matter of the fact that the guy couldn't stay on the field. It was 10 different things every year.
But was he really that good?
It was a toe. It was an arm. I think he could play when he was healthy. I mean, that's what they would tell you, at least, is that they were excited about him when he was on the field. It was just a matter of him never being on the field. I mean, look, he wasn't a full-time guy for a couple of those years.
Sure.
Five starts. 5-6-4-1-12 last year. And I think him being able to step in and playing as many snaps as he got to last season, I think he's closer to the guy we saw last year than the guy we saw in the years before.
Okay. I mean, I hope so. But I will say he had, in 46 games, he's not playing 100% of the snaps. No one's saying he is. Let's say he's playing half the snaps. He had 12.5 sacks over 4 years. I mean, he almost topped his career total. And you can make the injury argument. He was still playing in games. He wasn't 100%. But if that's the case, why are we going to believe that he's going to be healthy over the next couple of years versus what he was in 2016? I mean,
we shouldn't necessarily. And he only played 14 games last year. I mean, the guy gets dinged up, and that's something you have to take into consideration when you're handing out big contracts. But I do think that he's a really good player.
I think if everything goes right, he's a really good player, but it's just tough for me to imagine everything going right. He doesn't have to be a superstar. If Clay Matthews can stay on the outside and they can have Nick Perry as a secondary pass rusher, things aren't all that bad. And I'm super excited about Kenny Clark this year as well.
He's the guy I would say if I could pick a breakout player. I feel like with LaTroy Guy out of there, he's going to take over a huge number of snaps. I think he'll play not double what he played last year, but he played, I think, 335, somewhere around there last season. Mm-hmm. I could see him playing more than 500 this year. He'll probably start next to Mike Daniels.
Oh, he will, for sure.
If his role expands, I think you saw enough from him late in the season to think that he can be a really big part of their defense.
Yeah, a little concerned about the defensive line depth. They did, like you said, they cut LaTroy Guy. Montrevious Adams, their third-round pick, has a broken foot. He's not going to be healthy early on in the season. They did bring in Ricky Jean-Francois, but, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not on the Ricky Jean-Francois bandwagon. It's like this dude making a difference on teams.
Does that exist?
From the Colts days, I feel like that was a thing where it was like, he's this super useful, versatile player. And like, he's fine. He's a fine reserve defensive lineman. I don't know that I'm really usually gonna make that much of a difference for the Packers. But it's going to be sort of the same things we've seen in years past. I mean, the secondary is going to have to play better. And we're going to have to, if you're a Packers fan, get more out of Clay Matthews than you have. I mean, he's phenomenal. We know when he's healthy, he's great. But I mean, we're now he's put together 11 and a half sacks over the last two seasons. He missed four games in 2016, but he played a full season in 2015. So is he going to stay outside? Is he going to be effective as an interior rusher? I mean, we know what he can do, but I don't know that he's been that guy we think of as a monster on a week-to-week basis anytime recently.
Even when he's gotten the snaps on the outside, he hasn't affected every play the way he used to. I know that it's hard to look at overall production and say he's not the same guy, because of course he's not. He's playing a huge chunk of his snaps inside. But even when he's outside, he does not look like the same player. Sure. And that's tough. You know, to ask a guy to go inside out, not very few guys can succeed doing that when they're doing two different roles. I mean, pass rushing is a game-long situation. Yeah. You need to get a feel for the guy you're playing against, everything else. So maybe a full-time switch back out there helps him, but it still isn't a guarantee.
And I mean, realistically, the Packers are going to spend enough time in their nickel packages that they don't need to necessarily have him play linebacker. I mean, if they're in the nickel this year, they should be able to put Morgan Burnett down and have him play linebacker and have one of Jake Ryan or Blake Martinez.
That's what they need to do, though, then. Because Martinez and Ryan worry me in pass, or worry yeah. me as pass defenders. They're not very good in coverage, so that's why they put Matthews back there. Mm-hmm. So it's Joe Thomas that guy to me with Burnett. I think they need to figure out that nickel situation, because you're just going to get chewed up if you're trotting Blake Martinez out there to guard running backs.
Mm-hmm. You know what would be the best way to ensure they're in the nickel package all the time? Scoring a ton of points and taking early leads and then forcing teams to pass the ball against them in the second half.
That seems like it might be in play.
That seems like a totally plausible outcome to me. I think, and this is my bold opinion, the Packers are going to be good. I think that they are my...
You don't say.
Yeah, I think they will be the number one seed in the NFC this season. I have them going 11-5, which to me will be the top team in the NFC. I don't know what you think about them.
I think they'll go 11-5 too. 11-5 or even 12-4. I think that's how good the offense can be. I think Seattle's going to be right there. I just feel like the offensive line clearly concerned with the Seahawks, but that would be the team that could knock them off. I think those are the two that are going to be right there at the top of the conference. And
yeah,
again, this is my nightmare just continues. And the problem is now I have so much Aaron Rodgers dragon material from the season of Game of Thrones that it's just going to be so easy to use it. I'm not even going to have to look for pictures anymore.
And it's at the point, I'm sure, where when Aaron Rodgers does anything good, people just send you pictures of dragons to use anyway on Twitter.
They just expect them. I think, you know, they don't necessarily send them to me. But either way, send the material over. I always appreciate it.
Yeah, I think what Robert Mace is saying is just tweet him pictures of dragons periodically.
Totally fine.
A team that I think we've both been a fan of in years past took a step backwards last year, the Minnesota Vikings, who went 8-8, a disappointing season in a lot of ways, given that, you know, they did lose Teddy Bridgewater before the year. They traded for Sam Bradford, expected him to kind of keep things going, but it was sort of a season that was sunk from week one on. Their defense was incredible early on during the season, but faded as the season went on. Harrison Smith had a high ankle sprain that really hurt them in the secondary, but this point, they're sort of a team in transition, it feels like. They moved off from Adrian Peterson. They spent that money elsewhere. And do you think that they took the savings they had from Peterson and spent it wisely?
I don't know if wisely is the right answer, but this is similar to the conversation we had about the Bears in the secondary. Mm-hmm. They spent a premium on these offensive linemen, but when you had the guys they had last year, this is an upgrade even if they're not that great of players. Sure. Having Mike Remmers and Riley Reiff there, again, no one's excited about it, but they can play. They can just line up and play, and that is an upgrade. If you think about they were the most hurt offensive line of the century, according to Football Outsiders last season. I mean, that offense is going to be better just almost by virtue of that, no matter what sort of talent they added on the outside or in the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, I don't know. Do you feel like this team is like quietly a contender? I kind
of
do.
It's
I think
not
they
out
have
of
a chance
question.
To do some stuff.
There's certainly a lot of young talent here, and it's not. I think something fans do a lot, and it's the nature of fans, but probably unfair, is to sort of take five or six young guys and say, okay, they're all going to take a leap forward.
Yes.
And you don't have to do that here. You don't have to have five or six guys take a leap forward. You could take one or two of those five or six guys and say, okay, well, this guy's going to take a leap forward, and if we get two of these guys to break out, it's going to be promising. You know, if Stephon Diggs takes another step forward, which is hardly out of the question. If Laquon Treadwell was a useful player in his second year after being a first-round pick and being totally anonymous last season.
If Michael Floyd is like somewhat of what Michael Floyd used to be when he gets back from suspension.
Yeah, if Adam Thielen takes a step forward, which he's done every year so far in his career, if Dalvin Cook is a useful running back from day one, which again is hardly out of the question, you know, if those guys, if two of those guys are good, then suddenly this is a pretty scary offense in some ways. At the same time, though, I mean, there are concerns. Like, there's no guarantee that Michael Floyd's going to be anything coming off of suspension. There's no guarantee that the offensive line is going to be good. It could be better, for sure. No one's saying it's going to be worse. It'd be impossible to be worse. But there's no guarantee that Palafline's going to be a useful center from day one, or that, you know, Riley Reiff.
I like him, though. I think he was a great pick, and I think that he has a chance to unlock everything. I mean, if he's good and that offensive line takes a step forward because of that, I think the offense can be, like, legitimately exciting at times.
Offensive line Twitter is certainly talking about Kyle Flan. I feel like he is a topic of conversation.
That's a place where I'm a part of that. That's the world I know.
I'm speaking from afar on that topic. But, I mean, you're talking about guys like Kyle Rudolph, Sam Bradford, who have had injury histories in the past. And then if mm-hmm. let's say Rudolph gets hurt, their tight end depth is non-existent. It's David Morgan, a sixth-round pick from last year, is they're going to be their number two tight end. If Bradford gets hurt, which is hardly out of the question, we're looking at Case Keenum, who I think Case Keenum is a okay backup, but unless Teddy Bridgewater is a lot healthier than he seems right now, he's not going to be able to play. And with Bradford, yeah, you know, him staying healthy is really the exception as opposed to the rule.
And you're talking about the offense taking a step forward. I think that that's possible, and you can envision a world in which that would happen. But for me, it's looking at the defense and just kind of the incremental improvements that can happen over there. And it's a couple different things. Having Danielle Hunter be a full-time player, I think he's going to be dominant this year. Having him be truly take over for Robeson, play most of the snaps, just from the start, be a guy, I think he has a chance. And that guy's 22.
Yeah.
He's going to be really good. And then the guy who's the most important player, I think maybe on the entire roster to me, is Anthony Barr.
Really?
Because the guy he was 2 years ago, we thought this is going to be one of the best defenders in the league for a decade. Mm-hmm. You know, that is just what he looked like. He took a significant step back last year.
Yeah.
And Zimmer wasn't afraid to say something about it. He just wasn't playing hard.
He got his Bruce Arians on.
And I think that everything you've heard out of camp this year, and it's not as if Mike Zimmer is this guy who throws effusive praise to people that don't deserve it.
Yeah.
He said that Barr is going to have a great season based on what he's seen so far. And I think that the idea that he was willing to say that when that wasn't the case, and now he's willing to say the opposite, we should be excited about that.
Yeah.
And it just seems to me like this defense, especially if Barr gets back to the guy we saw, is so much closer to the unit we saw over the first half of the season than the second half. Mm-hmm. Everson Griffin said they burnt out. And when that offense is on the field for two plays and then out, you're going to get burned out. And I think if this defense can be a top five unit, which is not out of the question at all to me, mm-hmm. the offense is going to be good enough that they can contend. I mean, if offense breaks right, they absolutely can be a scary playoff team.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And I think that, you know, I'm talking about those breakout guys. Daniel Hunter's already broken out. He's already a superstar. He hasn't played the number of snaps, which makes you think he's going to be a superstar. But like, even on a limited basis, he's been incredibly impactful. One of the best pass rushers in all of football on a snap-by-snap basis. Tom Johnson, someone I talk about every year, is being super underrated. Even if Sharif Floyd can't play, and it looks like that's going to be a real concern for them this year.
It's a bummer, man. I mean, it is. When one of the reasons that we were excited about this team, I think, is that we like good plans.
Yeah.
Teams with good plans should be rewarded for those plans. And Sharif Floyd was that draft where they had two first-round picks. They built this roster up with really good homegrown talent. Mm-hmm. And just to see it go sideways with a guy like that solely based on injury, that just sucks.
Yeah, but when you can sub in Tom Johnson, who's really effective, that's
it's not good. Bad.
Like, when you have that, that's good. Eric Kendricks would probably take a leap forward. Trey Waynes could probably take a leap forward. Xavier Rhodes is already one of the best cornerbacks in football. Harrison Smith is one of the best safeties in football. Like, there's star-level talent, and there are guys who you would expect to improve because they're young and they're first and second-round picks. From
Terrence Newman's just hanging out.
Terrence Newman is
just like, I'm still okay. And the other guy that people seem to love that mm-hmm. makes the Sharif Floyd thing a little bit easier, people love Jahlil Johnson, guy they picked in the fourth round. He looks like he could be pretty good. And that was a guy that a lot of draft picks liked, and he's come in and played well when he's gotten the chance, the guy from Iowa. Mm-hmm. So if he can add some depth there, it just seems like there's no weakness to this defense. And the floor is high, but the ceiling is also incredibly high.
Can I ask you a question, though?
Sure.
So Jahlil Johnson was born July 12th, 1994.
Sure.
What are the chances he was named after Jahlil White?
I'd say it's pretty strong.
They're pretty high, right?
As a man who grew up in that era and was watching a lot of Family Matters, I think it's in play.
I don't know. There's something about that to me where it's like, dude is obviously going to be a good player. Not obviously, but everything says he's going to be a good player. It's pretty remarkable that a dude named after Urkel turned into an NFL player. I just think that is really surprising to me.
I just love all the Shaquilles we have now.
It's a wonderful life.
But all the juniors, like Asante Samuel Jr. is one of the best prospects in the country right now. It's too much for me, man. It's too much. I turned 30 in 2 days. It's all getting to me.
The oldest possible age, 30 years old.
I know.
Upsetting.
My life is pretty much over.
It does seem upsetting that there's a lot of Shaquilles, but not that many Anfernees.
That is disappointing. I mean, it just speaks to the tragedy of Penny Hardaway.
It's true. It's really upsetting. Do you have a breakout player for this team?
I think Dalvin Cook is the easiest guy to point to. I mean, I feel like people loved him coming out. I think the offensive line has a chance to be a lot better. I would love to see him be good because I think some balance in that running game or some balance in that offense combined with what they were through the air last year, that's exciting. I would love to see him come in and just be a really good running back from day one.
Does it seem weird that they sort of did like a mini Bears thing where they signed Latavius Murray, and then a couple months later, they're like, oh, actually, let's just draft Dalvin Cook, and now it seems like they are super in on Dalvin Cook, and Latavius Murray is going to be a very expensive sort of like secondary running back.
I hated the contract when they gave it out.
Yeah.
It just didn't seem like something to do during a season when there was so much talent coming out in the draft.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the opposite of what happened at tackle, right? They had to hand out that money because there were no options in the draft. Mm-hmm. The draft was so devoid of people that you kind of, if you wanted an upgrade, you had to spend a premium as well.
Right.
At running back, the opposite was true. I mean, you could have gotten 16 guys in the draft. So giving Latavius Murray $8.5 million guaranteed made no sense to me even at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that was definitely fair. And it's a sunk cost at this point. They're pretty much stuck. They're going to have to. It's to be fair, it's a little backloaded. They're only paying him, I think, about $3 million for this year, and they can get out of it by paying $1.2 million in dead money next year. But it's a frustrating
thing. One-year deal. I mean, so it doesn't really matter, which is, I think, is part of this. Mm-hmm. But again, these one-year deals that don't really matter, like the one my team played as quarterback, they're still not fun. You still don't like to see them on your books.
Yeah. I would say my breakout player is Trey Waynes. 2015 first-round pick. I think that if they get Trey Waynes going, suddenly you have a great pass rush by all accounts. You have a very versatile, very rangy set of linebackers and pass protection. And then you have Xavier Rhodes, and if Trey Waynes is very good, a very good second cornerback, that pass defense might be the best pass defense in football. It's that scary if everything goes right.
I totally agree. Trey Waynes is one of those interesting players where you see the gap between physical talent and understanding how to play football.
Yeah.
Like with some guys, it's a little harder to spot, but with him, it's like, oh, he's very fast, but he doesn't understand how to track the ball or how not to touch people.
Yes. But if you figure anyone's going to get the most out of him, it's Mike Zimmer.
Totally. And I think that it's reasonable to believe that he's going to take that step forward. And Mike Zimmer said this. Now, I talked to him about this last year, just the how slowly defensive backs come along and how much you have to help them along. Mm-hmm. And Mike Zimmer is he is a secondary coach. That is what he is. And he still loves working with those guys, and I think that it's totally in play for Trey Waynes to take a big step forward. He's not been in the league that long, man. He's very young.
How the Mike Zimmer eye thing? How like I feel like that was such an obvious thing to me where it's like, oh no, I would never make it as a football coach. Given that if my eye is like a bad contact day, the rest of the week is done for me.
I'm done. Yep, I don't leave the house.
It's awful. And so to have...
Let alone coaching a football team.
Yeah. Like, I hope it works out better than it has, because it seems like it's just the... you don't need that. Coaching is hard enough as is. Like, to have that happen to you, just it's so scary.
I'm not trying to make light of this, because by all accounts, Mike Zimmer is a lovely man. And, you know, people that play for him love him. But if anybody can pull off that aesthetic, it's Mike Zimmer. Yeah. I mean, like, that guy just looks tough all the time. And I really appreciate that. Him gutting through this is impressive. And I think that it's not lost on those guys. They love him, and especially the players on that defense. And they play for him. And it's no secret as to why.
Yeah. One other thing we should mention, special teams was a big problem for them last year. Obviously, Blair Walsh was a mess early in the season before being released.
Did you see the Blair Walsh stare down last week?
I loved it. You know what? Go Great. For it, Blair Walsh. He said all that. The Viking sideline started it. I don't care. You could start it. You're an NFL player. Do what you want. Go for it, field goal.
Blair Walsh.
Go nuts.
You live your life, Blair Walsh.
Yeah, they were second worst in the league in kickoffs. They were one of the worst teams on field goals. So you hope that with a full season of Kai Forbath, that's going to be better for them this season. I think they're going to take another leap forward. I think that they're going to be more like the team we saw in 2015. They're not going to win the division. I think the Packers are still the favorites, but I have them going 9-7. I have them finishing as a wild card in the NFC.
10-6 for me. I think that they're a double-digit team. I think that they're going to be a very annoying team in the playoffs.
I do too. I just hope that they get health in the spots where they need to be healthy. Because if Sam Bradford goes down with a torn ACL in week two, this could go south really quickly, and it'd be a shame given all the talent they have in other parts of their roster.
I totally agree.
I totally agree. This was a great podcast, Maze. Good work.
This is fun, man. I miss it. I like talking to you about stuff.
Where can people listen to more of you talking about stuff with other people?
We do the Ringer NFL show every Tuesday and Friday. It's me and Kevin Clark. You know, we have guests from the Ringer. You know, we count down our 33 biggest questions of the preseason right now, getting about halfway through those. And then you can read me on theringer.com. Yeah, I write there pretty regularly, so please come check it out. We'd appreciate it.
Robert Mays, thank you for appearing on my show, the Bill Barnwell Show.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, guys, thanks so much for listening to today's show. We're coming back next week. We're going to finish up the division previews. And then, of course, the NFL season starting real soon. We'll have shows coming for you every week talking about the upcoming NFL campaign. So, again, thanks so much, and more coming next week.